This is the State of Things broadcasting from the American Tobacco Historic District. I'm Frank Stachowiak. This week, rewind your mind and enjoy the analog bliss of VHS. Home entertainment shook the media landscape and paved the way for the social media culture of oversharing of the everyday. Independent and avant-garde film and found niche audiences through networks of local video rental stores. The stores were a weekly ritual for many families and a gathering place for community. The second annual VH Estival gets underway in Raleigh this week. It's a celebration of rental stores, home videos, and the furthest fringes of film. To tell us more, we're joined by Josh Schaefer, VHS culture captain and manager of Video Vortex, and Skip Elsheimer is here, owner of AV Geeks and consigliere for the Alamo Drafthouse. Josh and Skip, welcome. Good to have you here.
Thanks, Frank.
Thanks for having us.
Well, it's good to have you, Skip. Give us a sense of what this is all about. What are we celebrating here?
So, from my dealings with AV Geeks, I collect old 16mm films. But before I collected 16, I collected VHS, and that's a whole culture that is slowly going away that people were considering to be obsolete. And when the Alamo Draft House came to Raleigh, we were told that we were going to get a video store and we were going to get 6,000 VHS tapes. And I was like, oh, that's interesting. And we're going to rent those tapes. Oh, that's interesting. And then Josh Schaefer showed up, and that's interesting. And so we said, like, let's put these on the floor and let's see who will rent them. And it's doing really well.
Well, Josh, tell us about your interest in VHS and a little bit. I mean, give us your sketch of that culture that we're talking about.
I mean, I grew up with VHS. It's just always been in my life. And as I was, you know, growing up, I was like a poor teenager, and I was trying to expand my film collection, and VHS was dirt cheap, and I love weird movies, and I just found out that there were so many weird movies that were just available on VHS, so I decided to start a zine called Lunch Meat and just write about it, and 10 years later, I have found this incredible culture that's very vibrant, alive, and passionate, so...
What did it mean, Skip? I mean, talk about that. Not only were you able to find these movies, but it also generated an industry because now the gatekeepers, the barriers to entry had been lowered, right?
Yes, yes. So basically, there are so many video stores that are in storage units now that there's just tapes that are just out there. And there's not a way for people to get them. Some people will go to thrift stores. They'll go to flea markets and things like that. But... yeah, you have a vast amount of this material. VHS is not as fragile as people think. You know, films that were released in the 80s are still, you can still play them back. And so it's really, and there's stuff that's on those tapes that just do not exist on any other format.
Well, and might not have existed had it not been for VHS, right, Josh? I mean, the fact is it lowered the price point for production and meant a lot more people could get into the business of making these films, which meant more ideas, right?
Absolutely. I mean, it just gave... pretty much anybody that could afford a VHS camcorder an opportunity to make a film or to capture some sort of entertainment or to put their ideas down, you know, and because if you think about it this way, where you have an idea for a film, you have $400, you could make a film with $400, put it in some artwork, and then automatically almost it could be in your local video store and people could see your film, and then you're a real live filmmaker and you can speak to the community around there, you know, because they can go into this video store and rent your film. So, I mean, it's an incredible thing. It totally changed the way films were made.
Well, like for instance, we're going to play a clip here in a second from the 1982 cult classic Basket Case. Tell us a little bit about it.
It's a super cult movie, super favorite. But I think, you know, what's really interesting is that Basket Case, when it came out on home videos were expensive. They were about like $60. And media decided to release Basket Case at an incredible price of $19.99. And they were like, this is insane. But it actually revolutionized the way people purchase home video, you know. So I think that's really interesting.
Let's listen to a clip.
What is the secret Dwayne is hiding in the basket?
What's in the basket? Easter eggs?
What's in the basket?
Clothes.
What's in the basket?
What's in the basket?
My brother.
What's in the basket?
Open it, if you dare. Basket Case.
That is from the 1982 cult classic Basket Case, showing this Sunday at 6 o'clock, the Alamo Drafthouse in Raleigh, part of their second annual VH Estival. I'm here with Josh Schaefer and Skip Elsheimer from the Alamo Drafthouse talking about this particular festival. And Skip, it's one thing to say, okay, yeah, maybe for $400 I could make that movie, but distribution does become the next issue.
Sure.
And that's where having local, video rental stores was really important.
Right. I mean, and so what you'll find is rental stores like in New York City, Los Angeles, San Francisco, these big urban places have more diversity as far as you had local filmmakers who were just like, I'll just get it on a shelf here. It didn't make it to, you know, middle America as much. But what would happen is then they would advertise in magazines that were about video culture, horror magazines, sci-fi magazines, and say, you know, a little classified ad in the back would advertise this movie, and you could buy it for $20.
Was there much? Were there many films that became kind of national sensations as a result of that? They got started somewhere in Cincinnati, and then everybody heard about it.
Yeah, I mean there was a tape trader culture as well, where people would make dub copies of things and distribute it to friends. One of the films that we're going to be showing, Heavy Metal Parking Lot, is an example of that, where somebody shot it for cable access and then made a dub of it, and then somebody made two dubs of it, and somebody made four dubs of it, and then it got this distribution. I mean, you could say South Park got distributed the same way. Initially, the first South Park was dubbed on VHS numerous times and spread across the nation.
Yeah, it's kind of the proto social media in a lot of ways, Josh. Certainly. In terms of, you know, this idea of things going viral, getting their local start, and everybody saying, what was that all about, and trying to spread the word.
Yeah, I mean, it's the springboard. I mean, if we look back, it was the way that people recorded, you know, all of their material, all of their entertainment, their thoughts, their art, everything. And VHS just absolutely changed the way that people could communicate. I mean, you know, you think about, like, people can, you know, let's put it this way. So somebody goes to a video store, right? And they rent this horror movie, and they're really into horror movies. And they watch this horror movie, and they're like, oh, wait a minute, this is shot on video. Or like, oh, this is just like some like five people making a movie. And it makes them think, oh, I could do this. Hmm. I could bring my idea to life through shot on video. I can make this happen. And it's the same way that somebody goes to a YouTube channel and they see someone talking about makeup or cars or VHS tapes. And they're like, I can do this too. And, you know, and I think it's kind of an inspiration, and in that way, it's very connected. It's a way, it was the way that people shared information, you know, like and exchanged it. So I think it was total springboard for all of that.
And
stuff.
The shared space of the video store. And
absolutely.
Before the national chains, really, your local video store became a meeting place, right?
Absolutely. It was a community, you know, and I think that's a big part of why I want to keep video store. I want to help keep video stores alive, because I think it is a great piece of community, something that should never go away for film lovers, for people that just want to come in and just explore film. It's such a wonderful place, because you meet, it's not an algorithm, you know, it's not some computer, there's no agenda. You know, you go in there and you can be very, exploratory, and there's people around there that love film and just want to talk to you about film and just want to help you find the movies you want to see or movies you haven't seen, or just have discussions about film culture. And I think it's just a really cool atmosphere, and it's something that's really beautiful. So,
what are some of the other films or types of film that you're going to be showing, Skip? I mean, these are kind of feature films. Are you going to be looking at other artifacts that were captured?
Well, like I said, we're showing the Heavy Metal Parking Lot, and the person who shot that video is actually going to be in attendance. There's some things that were shot directly to video that people are showing. And some of them are feature length, but there are some found footage things. Girls of the Carnival is one where somebody found the tape.
Right.
And was like, this is an amazing document of this time and this place, and we'll be talking about that.
He'll be there.
Yeah,
Derek will be there. He just did. It's really interesting, because I think, you know, we talk about found footage, and found footage festival will be there, and that's more like tapes that they find at a thrift store, and they're like, look at this incredible thing that happened, and that's on videotape, you know, and they kind of make fun of it. I think what Girls at the Carnival offers is this raw, sincere look at middle American life in the early 90s, because it's unscripted. You know, they even talk about, maybe we'll get on America's Funniest Home Videos, and, you know, it's completely sincere. And I think it's a really great document of what video captured at that time. And there's so many examples of that. And I just think that Girls at the Carnival is an exemplary piece of that kind of culture. And I just want to share it and have people look at it.
Well, and the dubbing and the distribution also became kind of a cottage industry as well. I mean, there are people who've, you know, made their living stealing other people's work.
Yes, that is true. That's
absolutely.
And passing it and passing it around. But again, it kind of becomes this kind of proto social media. So you've got these cases. Is there any way in which you can tell how this affected mainstream, you know, like Hollywood? Like, did Hollywood pay attention and say, oh, look at this stuff, and then sort of try to co-opt what was going on?
Well, I would say that if Quentin Tarantino had not worked at a video store, we would not have Quentin Tarantino. And there's a whole industry right there.
Let's play another clip. This is another film, I think, that sort of qualifies a little bit, sort of on the order of Basket Case. This one from the fantasy thriller Terror Vision from 1986.
Stanley Putterman's new satellite TV has just gone on the blink. And it's drawn in a creature from outer space. Like all new pets, this one's causing a little trouble around the house. And he's eating the Puttermans out of house and home.
That's a clip from Terror Vision, 1986 fantasy thriller. It'll be showing Friday at 8:50 p.m. at the Alamo Drafthouse in Raleigh, part of the second annual VH Festival. I'm here with Josh Schaefer and Skip Alzheimer, who are talking about the festival and will help be guiding some of the conversations. Wait, talk about the production values in general on these films. Are they highly uneven?
Boy, they are on the spectrum. They are. You have very well-funded projects, but the story's not so good. And then you have some that are not well-funded at all, but the story is really compelling. So it kind of goes all over the map. I mean, it's just like a Hollywood film. You know, Hollywood films, you're like, wow, I just watched this epic CGI fest, and there's no story there. There's nothing that's interesting about it. But then I watched this low-budget indie, and this is a great story. So,
is there a way in which the it did evolve, or can you tell if I watch a 1983 film and then I see one maybe that was done in 94? I mean, is there a real evolution, or it just remains kind of a spectral industry?
I mean, I think it really depends on the artist. You know, I think it really depends on what their vision is. And I think that's what's great about VHS is that it brought all those visions together. You know, and I think that it offers such a wide scope of so many different visions of art. You know, and from 1983 to 1994, I think some formulas changed, and I think some influences changed, and I think some topics changed, of course, because I think it's all reflective of how society or what people were thinking and things like that. So I think those changes are all there, but... I think people got smarter with shot on video filmmaking, and that's a direct effect of how people create shot on video filmmaking or how they create films in general, and using those trends and those talents and things like that. So you can see those changes for sure. People just got smarter about distributing their titles and what would do better on video and what would do better in the theater. So
I think filmmakers got younger too.
Absolutely.
Like I remember when I was in high school, I shot a little short film on video, and it's not very good. Nobody's ever going to see it.
Come on, Skip.
But I'll release that, Skip.
Yeah. But I found different things. Like there's this another thing that's been circulated is Raiders of the Lost Ark, the adaptation, where you had a bunch of seventh graders who decided they were going to remake shot for shot Raiders of the Lost Ark. And it's phenomenal.
Wow.
Really? It's really amazing. It's very dangerous too, because there's lots of fire and really horrible stunts. But it was this drive. Like people saw this and they're like, I have a video camera, and I have a deck that I can edit with, and so I can make something.
And that's that fuel for that passion.
Yeah.
You know? That's the machine.
Did the chains the chain video stores affect this in any way? Because again, we talked about local stores. It was a gathering place. You didn't know what you were going to find there, but it gets really predictable at Blockbuster, right?
Yeah, and that's the thing that you see with almost any type of industry. It's like the mom and pops get driven out because Blockbuster can have 20 copies of every new release, and that's what people were wanting to see, the new releases. Whereas the mom and pops, some of them survived that, but some of them didn't. And then Blockbuster was like, well, we're not making that money with this anymore, so we're gone.
I got a lifetime membership to VizArt a month before it closed.
You know, there's still one in Charlotte.
Oh, okay. Well, but
I don't know if they'll honor it.
It'll be adjustable.
I saved the card because it's lifetime, so I still have it. That also raises the question, you know, sort of you can imagine, I don't know where all your tapes are coming from. Do you know? Because it would seem to me that there was a video store in Chillicothe, Ohio. It's probably got some cool stuff, and you got to get there. You might have the ones from New York and Chicago, but what was going on in Kansas and other places, right?
Yeah. I mean, there's so much stock everywhere. You got to think VHS was the most popular home medium maybe ever, right. You know, so probably ever. And I mean, there are so many tapes everywhere, and there's so many collectors now, and there's such an online community, and everybody's pulling these in and rescuing these. I know people, friends of mine, that go out and specifically just go out and search for VHS tapes and then, you know, resell them online, and it puts them back into circulation. But yeah, what happens to those old video store stock? I mean, sometimes it's rescued, sometimes it's not, you know, and I think that's kind of the mystery, is like, what can we uncover next? And I think that's the beauty of VHS collecting and culture, is what was the next thing that's going to be uncovered and that we can share.
What so far is the biggest surprise for you?
The biggest surprise ever from collecting VHS?
Yeah.
I'm not even surprised. Anymore, honestly, like I feel like that's what's
in the moment. In that moment, you said, "Oh my God!"
Recently,
Okay.
I mean, really, Girls at the Carnival.
Yeah,
I really liked finding that. I found it through, and that's why I want to show it here. Is just, it's so striking. You know, it's so sincere, and I love stuff like that. And honestly, like finding like a movie like Slaughterville. Right, this is totally independent, regional. And you research it and you find there's no IMDb for it. You find that there's very little mention of it anywhere. And then, you know, you and your friends do research and you figure out that there's only 65 copies of this film out there on VHS. And you're like, wow, I'm holding one of these in my hands. And this is a piece of home video history. But I mean, I think like directly, it's about the content. But I think the most surprising thing is when you really dig into this stuff and you find out the full history. Mm-hmm. You're surprised about how far this film has come and where it comes from.
Skip, you talked about the robust industry. The fact is people are making an effort to collect these things and trade them online. So is it pretty easy for me if I want to go find a VHS, I can still get them?
Yeah. I mean, you can go on to eBay or Craigslist or go to a thrift store and you'll find bags of them for sale.
Right.
Now, if you're particular about what you want to watch, then you have to dig a little bit deeper and maybe pay a little bit more. But it's still out there. I mean, video decks are still out there. We're still renting. It's pretty strong, surprisingly, considering that they haven't made a VHS deck in like 5 years.
Like 3 years ago, yeah.
Yeah, yeah.
Wait, so are you digitizing all these, or is that a scandal? Do you have to watch them, you know, on your?
Well, no, you have to watch them on a VHS deck. And at the Alamo, we rent VHS. And, you know, because the Alamo, we're all about movie culture. And
talk about that decision, the decision to rent them, to collect all these and
right.
rent
well,
them.
Well, a lot of people are like, well, but they're fragile and they're rare. And we're like, yeah, but if they're just going to sit on the shelf, what's the point?
Yeah.
You know, you got to get it out in the world. And yes, we might lose one or two there. They're fairly robust. Finding the decks and cleaning them and making them work has been a challenge, but it's not impossible.
But some of the material came about because of the VHS revolution. So would it be okay to say this movie would not have been made otherwise?
Exactly.
That's the point of it. Now we're going to digitize it because ultimately the oxide will wear off.
Right. I mean, that's an
DVD
ultimate thing
break.
That we've talked with other Alamo people and other big collections about digitizing. And I know some universities, which is it Yale that's doing?
Yeah.
Yale has a giant collection that they're slowly digitizing. And so, you know, where do those files go and how do people get access to them? I think that, you know, for researchers, it's fine, but, you know, the general public's not going to get access to it. So how do we figure that out?
I mean, I feel like the general public is doing that anyway. You know, I feel like you go on YouTube and you see these things, but there's always something deeper, you know, and that's the beauty of VHS is that there's always something that's going to be deeper than what you think, you know, and I think that's why I continue to collect VHS and why I continue to support the culture is because there is so much information in cultural history from film to like just people filming their birthdays or their barbecues or their kids' first day of school. I mean, there is so much cultural information contained on VHS, and I think all of that stuff is very important.
Josh Schaefer, VHS culture captain and manager of Video Vortex. Skip Elsheimer is the owner of AV Geeks and the consigliere at the Alamo Draft House. And you can find both of them at the VHStival. That is going to start this Thursday. It runs through Sunday at the Alamo Draft House. And you can get more information at our website, stateofthings.org. Josh, Skip, thank you so much for being here.
Thank you, Frank.
So much.
Just ahead, the last male northern white rhino died last year, and a North Carolina state filmmaker was there to document the last years of life. We'll talk about that in a moment. Stay tuned.